Kia ora and welcome to Amarin's Podcast, episode 158. Today is Friday, May 29th, 2009. This is the last Friday of May, and that means that today is my last Amarin's Podcast for the month of May, and we start June next week. And, of course, this is also a holiday weekend. It's Queen's Birthday weekend. Queen's Birthday is on Monday. Unfortunately, it's the last holiday until October, which I'm not very happy about. However, Nigel's family gave us a weekend getaway at a Bay of Islands resort hotel for our civil union. And so Nigel and I are planning on going up there and using that sometime during the winter. It's a bit warmer up there, but also just, you know, sort of get away during the time of year when there aren't any holidays. So that's the plan. We'll keep you posted about that. And of course, this being Queen's Birthday weekend means that, as I've said in the past, this is every Queen's birthday. That's what it's traditionally called. And one of the co-hosts of our Good Morning program, who's gay, was talking about Queen's birthday. And so he said, so that means it's my birthday. And at the time, I thought, yep, this is another thing that you wouldn't see on American broadcast television. But anyway, be that as it may. Today, I'm just going to tell you about a few different things. This will probably be a relatively short episode because I've got a lot on. And first, a couple of items from the news. Yesterday, the new government, well, it's not so new anymore, about 6 months old, introduced their first budget. And a lot of people are saying, oh, it's a sound budget and all that. And I have some mixed feelings about it. First of all, they were saying adamantly that they needed to do things to protect New Zealand's credit rating with the international rating agencies. The leader of the opposition, who's the leader of the Labour Party, has said that the ratings agencies have no credibility because they gave Enron a good rating just before it collapsed. They gave good ratings to people involved in the subprime things. Well, that's all true, but it's irrelevant because the entire credit structure is built on these rating agencies, Standard & Poor's, for example. So it does us no good to get a bad credit rating from these credit rating agencies. And although the leader of the opposition is correct, as I said, it's irrelevant. However, that doesn't mean that the budget is a good one. The budget actually increases spending by something like $15 billion or something. I can't remember exactly. But it makes some significant cuts. The previous Labour-led government introduced this thing, well, it's been called the Cullen Fund because the deputy prime minister and the finance minister at the time was Dr. Michael Cullen. But essentially what it is a savings account where New Zealand sets aside government money in a special investment account so that when the baby boomers retire, there will be plenty of money there to cover their what we call superannuation, which is like Social Security. And unfortunately, of course, that fund took a big hit during the market crash a few months back. And it's just starting to recover, but it's not doing well. But the future of it is based on annual contributions from the government to keep this fund topped up so that we pre-fund retirement. The national government announced that it was suspending the payments for this year, which was a bad thing. But in the budget, they've announced that they will not resume contributions until the government is back in surplus, which they don't predict will happen for 11 years. And of course, by that time, it's too late. The baby boomers are already starting to retire, and they're going to be in full retirement mode by then. They are keeping the entitlement level at 2/3 of the annual of the average working wage, and they are not raising taxes, and they're also not cutting taxes. So what's going to end up happening is that a future government is going to either have to radically invest in this fund, you know, suddenly dump a lot of money into it. They're going to have to raise taxes on working people, who will be fewer, basically Generation X and Generation Y, and so on. Or they're going to have to cut the amount that's paid to retirees, or they're going to have to raise the retirement age or some combination of all of these things, none of which would have been necessary if they had kept funding this retirement fund, this savings account. It was something that had been hailed by financial observers around the world as forward-thinking and a prudent way of dealing with the bulge in the retirement population that will happen when the biggest bulge in the baby boom hits, some 15 years from now or so. So we are in a bit of a pickle. Now, the national government says it would have been stupid, basically, to borrow to invest this money. And they're right. But they could have cut spending, but they didn't. Instead, they cut spending on science and technology research investment, which would have helped business because the previous Labour-led government was going to be investing especially in food and agriculture technology, which is sort of our natural niche. And they've eliminated that. They're not increasing any spending on tertiary education, unlike Australia. And they're not investing much in education, full stop. They're investing a lot of money in roading. They're investing a lot of money in things that business wants. But they're not doing much to help ordinary people. And they're certainly not doing anything to help retirees. They're doing what many governments of both parties have done for many, many years, which is to take the hard decisions and put them off, say, this can be dealt with in the future. So on balance, I mean, in large measure, the budget isn't that bad. It could have been far worse. It could have been really draconian. It could have slashed welfare benefits to the poor, for instance. And they didn't do that. They could have cut health spending, and they didn't do that. But they aren't very forward-thinking either. And, of course, the reason is that finance minister, Bill English, who's also deputy prime minister, despised the Cullen Fund. He opposed it. He wanted to repeal it as soon as they took office. But he had to be moderated by the prime minister, John Key, who's from a more centrist part of his party. And they're running the show right now. And so they had to put a check on this Bill English, is his name, and say, no, you're not going to gut it. You're not going to close it down. But he might as well have, for all the difference it's going to make. But yeah, so I think some battles will be ahead, and National next loses the election, the next government is going to have to address this problem that they've just created for us. But other than that, as I said, it's kind of a sort of budget. Certainly not very exciting. But that one thing does deeply concern me because I'm theoretically only 15 years away from retirement, and obviously I want the money to be there when I retire. In other news, and this is quite different. There was yesterday an Auckland man who's in his early 40s, apparently, was arrested on charges of trying to infect three men with HIV, deliberately infecting three men with HIV, and the fourth charge of attempting to infect a man with HIV. Now, this story has been kicking around Auckland's gay community for quite a while, and the story goes that he allegedly was going on online hookup sites to find these young men, mid-20s generally. And he apparently, allegedly, whatever you want to use, was grooming them in the same way that a pedophile would groom a victim. And he convinced them that they loved him, they were in love with him, or they were in love together, whatever, so that they would agree to unprotected sex. And three men have become HIV positive because of him. And, of course, the fourth one tried to infect the fourth one and was unsuccessful. Now, it's unclear exactly how many people he has done this with, because it was said when I first heard about this story a couple of months back that the alleged predator, they're calling the HIV predator, this alleged predator had done this with several men, but because they believed they loved him, they wouldn't come forward to the police. Now, this may change now that he's been arrested. The police also think that he deliberately infected or attempted to deliberately infect women as well, but none of them have come forward either. The problem is that under New Zealand law, the alleged predator has name suppression, and we don't know anything more about him than that he's an Auckland man about 40, and that's all we know. And until his name suppression is lifted, it's unlikely that other people are going to come forward. And this typically happens. Somebody's arrested with a crime. They have automatic name suppression. They go before the judge for their arraignment. And if they can apply to have the name suppression continued, or the judge may say no. And as far as I know, he hasn't yet been arraigned. So I don't know what's going to ultimately happen. But I'm certainly keep following the story and let you know what does happen because of it. There's only been one other case of deliberate attempted. Let me rephrase that. There's only been one other case of somebody being tried for HIV infection in the past. It's a little bit unclear whether or not he was deliberately infecting women. He was an African immigrant who was infecting women, or if he was more just didn't care. And there is a subtle difference there, especially when it gets to criminal intent. But nevertheless, he ended up being put in what's called preventive detention, which essentially means locked up forever, because they couldn't trust him not to have unprotected sex. Well, if this guy is found guilty of these charges, this new HIV predator, he will face 14 years in prison on each of the three most serious charges and another 7 years on the attempted infection charge. So this is a really big deal. But obviously, if there have only been two cases that I'm aware of, it's really quite rare, which is a good thing. But it is kind of interesting. And it did take the police a little while to get around to making an arrest. And I don't quite know why. Maybe they needed to make sure that they had all the ducks in a row. I don't know, because in New Zealand, the police and the prosecution are the same. The Crown prosecutors are just another branch of the police. And they work together in their cases. And so it could be as simple as that. But it is a kind of interesting story. In the sense that it's something you don't hear every day, at least not in New Zealand. And I'll certainly keep following that. There's also been some reaction to the Proposition 8 decision in California. And writing on gaynz.com, Craig Young was arguing that the incremental approach that New Zealand and Britain took is a more sensible way to go. And the same-sex marriage or bust approach obviously isn't. Well, I don't think he quite understands the dynamics of American politics and the way the American states are organized, more importantly. But he has a point. Right now, we don't have same-sex marriage in New Zealand, but we do have civil unions which provide the rights and privileges of marriage. So at the moment, same-sex couples in New Zealand are protected under law in the same way that a married couple is, even though we aren't called that. Now, as I've said many times before, and he even admits, it's inevitable that there will be same-sex marriage, or let's put it this way, there will be full marriage equality in New Zealand someday. He thinks it could be about a decade. I don't know that for sure. But I do know that now that same-sex couples are able to have this legal recognition, that their families are clearly embracing it, that things are changing and the attitudes of people here are changing. I've said before that I don't know anybody who talked about our civil union as anything other than a wedding and that we were getting married or got married. Nobody talks about it as if it's anything different from heterosexuals. And legally, it basically isn't any different. But it is, of course, a different word. So I don't know. I don't want to get into a discussion of same-sex marriage or marriage equality, rather, in the United States, because that's a political topic, and that belongs over in too political, probably. I just wanted to highlight the fact that it is being discussed here as well. And I'm not so sure that the kind of I don't want to use the word smugness, but the kind of self-satisfied attitude maybe is justified, because it is true that it diffused the issue here to put through civil unions rather than marriage equality. But it isn't true that it's necessarily a better thing. Each individual place has to do things differently. And it worked here. It might work in Australia with a different prime minister, but it wouldn't work everywhere. And it probably shouldn't work everywhere for a variety of reasons that I'm not going to go into right now. But that's all I wanted to say about that. I just did want to mention, I'll try to remember to put a link in the show notes because it was kind of an interesting thing. You have to register on the forums in order to be able to leave comments. And I just checked a little while ago and they actually haven't put that article on the forums yet. So I can't comment on it either. And finally, and I said it was going to be a short episode, I just wanted to go over comments. And the commenter on episode 157 was Roger Green. Of course, that was the Jury's Out episode, who said, in New York State, you get paid some modest amount per day. However, large entities, many businesses and most governments, are expected to just pay you for your time as though you'd shown up for work. It doesn't come off your vacation or sick time. And this is me again. And I should reiterate, I don't know what the current policy is in Illinois, because I was called for jury duty more than 20 years ago, I think, or about 20 years ago, maybe longer. And so I have no idea what the current policy is on that. It could be completely different than what my experience was. Anyway, back to Roger. He says, but no, Arthur, I totally oppose getting rid of jury trials. While your characterization of the jury pool is largely accurate, though, as I've implied, less so after the reforms in New York State, having access to the jury of one's peers is foundational. I consider it as core as voting or being counted by the census. Besides, one can request a non-jury trial in many cases. And that's actually a good point, Roger. If people like me are suspicious of the jury pool, the potential jurors, they can always just decline a jury trial and be tried by the judge. And in many cases, that might be preferable. In many places, it might be preferable, too, depending, you know, if you're an openly gay person accused of a crime and you're in a very homophobic place, you probably aren't going to be any better with a jury than you would be with a judge. But who knows? That's something that would have to be decided in consultation with your attorneys. And it did occur to me as well that the national government's proposal to remove the right of jury trial to people who are facing a charge that would result in imprisonment of 3 years or less, those are probably the people who most need juries because their peers are probably on those juries. People are unemployed, people who, well, they might be retired, but people who aren't working. Because very often these are fairly petty criminals doing relatively minor crimes. But the thing is that the jury trial, the allegation goes, in New Zealand, is being manipulated by attorneys in order to slow down the process in the hope, I think, that they can somehow get off by dragging it out, I guess. And, of course, there's the old thing that we used to say about term papers when I was in university, and that was that if you can't dazzle them with brilliance, baffle them with bullshit, which, of course, is not a good strategy because most university instructors worth their salt can see through that. But it could be the same sort of thing with juries, that the defense attorneys think that if they can just baffle them enough that they'll be more easily led. I don't know. It's certainly something I can't comment on one way or the other because I've never even been in a trial. I've never seen one, never been a juror, nothing. Except on TV. Does that count? I used to watch Perry Mason as a kid. Does that count? Although I saw in the news that apparently Sonia Sotomayor used to watch Perry Mason as well when she was a girl. So I suppose I had that in common with her. And finally, I just wanted to have sort of a general word, not necessarily about Proposition 8 itself or marriage equality or anything like that, but kind of about this whole thing in general. In recent weeks, I've been having a lot to do with listeners and people I've encountered through other podcasts and so on, through the Twitters and through the chat rooms of Dubious Intent, either their show or Archer's show or what have you. And it's been a lot of fun. I've really enjoyed it. And I said a long time ago that the whole reason I did the podcasting was for that interaction and the, I don't know, the sort of social aspect that goes with this whole podcasting thing. But it does occur to me that if more of us went out of our way to make connections with other people, we might not be fighting quite so many legal battles at the ballot box either. Study after study has shown that when people get to know gay and lesbian people, that the homophobia against them declines. And I've said frequently that prejudice, and hatred in particular, is only possible in the third person. You can hate those people. But it's much harder to hate somebody you know and like. So if one is gay or lesbian, one ought to try to come out wherever and whenever possible so that people can get to know a real live gay or lesbian person. And similarly, people who are not gay or lesbian but support marriage equality, it would help if they found the opportunities to share that with their peers as well. Because the more that the foreign becomes familiar, the more that it will become second nature to people. Change happens incrementally. Change must happen organically. And the only way that that's going to happen is if we all start to work on this being friends. It's not hard to do. It really isn't. But it's well worth it. And that's my thought on the whole subject. That's it for this week. Next week is going to be a busy week. There's going to be an episode of Too Political sometime during the week. And maybe a live podcast with Scotty from Little Aussie Battler. We'll see how that goes because next week is the busiest week of the month for me. And I'll do the best I can. But thanks for listening. I hope you had a good week. I hope you have a great weekend. And I'll talk to you again next week. Bye. You can leave a comment on this or any other episode of the Amrens Podcast at amrenspodcast.com. You can send an email to me at Arthur, that's A-R-T-H-U-R, at amrenspodcast.com. Or you can ring my U.S. comment line on 206-666-5172. This podcast is produced and distributed under Creative Commons license. Complete details at the website.